Hello everyone, John Sands speaking. Welcome to all listeners of the Chester and Flint Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 2nd of January. I hope all are well and full of good news and good food. I expect we can look forward to a few chilly days, but you may have noticed already that the days are becoming slightly longer. My Bramley apple tree has just one apple left. I shan't pick it up, as I saw little Blue Tit having a good peck at it. So, now we're in the new year of 2026, looking forward as people have done for thousands of years all over the world. The ancient celebrations of the new year varied across different cultures and regions. Here are some of the most notable ones. The Babylonians celebrated this festival around the spring equinox, marking the beginning of the new year and the renewal of the earth. It involved rituals, feasts, and ceremonies dedicated to the gods. The Egyptians celebrated their new year with a festival known as the Wepet Renpet, meaning the opening of the year. This festival coincided with the annual flooding of the Nile River, which brought fertility and sustenance to the land. The Chinese New Year, also known as the Spring Festival, has been celebrated for over 3,000 years. It begins on the second new moon after the winter solstice and is marked by family reunions honouring ancestors. These ancient celebrations reflect the deep connection between people and nature, as well as the importance of renewal and the new cycle of life. They serve as a reminder of the enduring human desire to celebrate and welcome the new year with joy and hope. Babylonians, about 2000 BE, were among the first to celebrate the new year, but not on January the 1st. Their new year, called Akitu, began in late March with the spring equinox. It was a time of renewal. Ancient Egypt, the Egyptian new year was tied to the annual flooding of the Nile River, which brought fertility to the land. Celebrations were linked to the rising of the star Sirius, a celestial event that heralded the flooding. In 45 BCE, Julius Caesar introduced the Julian calendar, declaring January the 1st as the official start of the year. The month was named after Janus, the Roman god often depicted with two faces, one looking to the past and the other to the future. Nowadays, New Year's Eve and New Year's Day celebrations vary widely across cultures, reflecting deep-rooted customs, hopes, and beliefs about how best to welcome a new beginning. From burning the old year away to ringing bells for spiritual cleaning. Here are some of the world's most fascinating traditions. In Spain, the new year is literally swallowed. At the stroke of midnight, Spaniards eat 12 grapes, one with each chime of the clock. Each grape represents luck for 1 month of the coming year. The challenge is part of the fun. You're supposed to finish all 12 exactly with the bell ringing. Legend says, if you finish in time, it means good fortune. If you choke, laugh, or miss a grape, there's bad luck or chaos ahead. The tradition dates back to the early 1900s, and today is practiced not only in Spain, but also across Latin America. Most Brazilians dress in white clothing, representing peace, and many flock to the sea to honor Yemanja, the Afro-Brazilian sea goddess. At midnight, people jump seven waves, make seven wishes, and sometimes offer flowers or candles to the ocean. In Japan, New Year's is deeply spiritual and serene. Buddhist temples ring their bells 108 times. The number 108 represents earthly desires and human sins in Buddhism. Each strike is believed to cleanse and prepare the soul for renewal. In Denmark, love comes in the form of broken crockery. Friends and family save up unused dishes throughout the year and smash them against loved ones' doors on New Year's Eve. Waking up to a pile of shattered plates means you will have good luck. Scotland's famous Hogmanay celebration means that after midnight, many homes await their first footer, the first visitor of the year, who should traditionally be a dark-haired man, historically linked to Viking folklore. The first footer often brings symbolic gifts. Greece is known for hanging onions. Onions are hung above doorways to symbolize rebirth and fertility. On New Year's Day, parents gently tap children's heads with the onion to pass on prosperity and luck. The United States blends old European beliefs with regional customs and pop culture spectacle, such as the Times Square ball drop in New York City. Millions watch the glittering crystal ball descend at midnight, one of the world's most broadcast New Year celebrations. Americans famously commit themselves to quitting bad habits, saving money, and losing weight. In Italy, especially in the South, it's considered lucky to wear red underwear on New Year's Eve. Red symbolizes life, love, fertility, and protection from misfortune. In Mexico, common systems include tossing buckets of water out of the door to wash away the past. Colorful underwear also plays a role: red for love, yellow for money. In Switzerland, people drop or spill whipped cream or ice cream on the floor on purpose on New Year's Eve. This symbolizes future wealth and overflowing blessings. The belief is that wasting something rich invites more richness in the year ahead. In parts of Peru, there's a festival called Tacanacuy, where people settle old grudges by engaging in good-natured, overseen fistfights. The belief is fight, forgive, then start the new year with a clean slate. Once the dust settles, everyone celebrates together. Resolutions. The tradition of making New Year's resolutions is almost as old as the celebration of the New Year itself. The Babylonians made promises to their gods that they would repay debts and return borrowed items. Ancient Romans offered sacrifices to Janus, the god looking forward and backward at once for the past and the future. By the medieval period, resolutions took on a more religious tone. Christians observed the Feast of the Circumcision on January the 1st, focusing on self-improvement and reflection. Now, today, people pledge to improve their health, their relationships, their finances, and other aspects of life with gym memberships and self-programs in abundance. There always has to be the occasional oddity. The famous Times Square ball drop in New York City began in 1907 as a replacement for fireworks. In Italy, wearing red underwear on New Year's Eve is considered a lucky charm for the year ahead. From its ancient roots to its modern revelries, New Year's Eve and New Year's Day symbolize humanity's enduring hope and resilience. This global celebration transcends borders and cultures, uniting us in a shared moment of reflection and renewal. We honor centuries of tradition while looking forward, hopefully, to a brighter tomorrow. So, whether you're eating grapes, kissing loved ones, or making ambitious resolutions, remember that this age-old ritual is a testament to the timeless human spirit and its quest for progress. And now to the hitty-gritty of 2026. Sunrise in Chester on Sunday, the 4th of January, is 8:25 a.m. and sunset is at 4:04 p.m. And now, over to the readers.
Hello, this is Helen Holyoke reading. Cheshire Police is pressing ahead with controversial plans to slash the number of PCSO posts across the county by 70%, despite a public backlash. Assistant Chief Constable Alison Ross has emailed local councils to say, following conclusion of the internal consultation, the proposal to reduce the number of PCSO Police Community Support Officer posts from 87 to 27 will now be progressed. She said the decision has not been taken lightly and those affected are being supported throughout the process. The email states, we fully recognise the valuable contribution that PCSOs make to our communities. However, the ongoing financial pressures facing the force, combined with the changing nature of crime and public expectations, mean that we must adapt our workforce model to ensure we remain fit for the future. We have had a cumulative reduction in our budget of £115 million since 2008-09 and currently need to make a further £13 million in savings by 2029. She says, reducing the number of PCSOs will also allow us to redeploy warranted police officers into local policing teams, ensuring we have the right resources and powers in place to tackle the issues that matter most to our communities. Cheshire West and Chester Full Council recently backed a motion calling on the force to reconsider the proposal, as did Cheshire East Council last week. Councillor Julie Smith, who seconded the Cheshire East motion, questioned whether the Chief Constable had even read it. She said, I don't understand why they've suddenly made this decision because there hasn't been full consultation and they're not listening to the residents. Communities want PCSOs. You only have to read social media and talk to people in the street who want to keep the PCSOs. They don't want a faceless PC that they have to contact by email. They want somebody they can get hold of when they need them.
Hello everyone, Margaret Bellis here. Two sisters who violently assaulted a friend and left her unconscious in the street have been jailed. Charlotte and Katrina Whittam appeared at Chester Crown Court on Tuesday the 17th of December, where Charlotte was sentenced to 2 years in prison and Katrina was jailed for 8 months. The pair had both pleaded guilty to assault occasioning actual bodily harm. The court heard that on the night of Sunday the 3rd of August, the sisters had been on a night out in Chester city centre with a friend, a 38-year-old woman, when a verbal altercation broke out on Watergate Street. The argument quickly escalated into violence. Katrina pulled the victim's hair, while Charlotte punched her repeatedly to the head before kneeing her in the face. Katrina then grappled the woman to the ground, pinning her using her body weight. While the victim was restrained, Charlotte delivered more than 20 blows to her head and attempted to break her right arm by stamping on it twice. The victim was then left unconscious in the middle of the street after Katrina stamped on her head. Members of the public came to her aid. The attack was captured on CCTV, with operators alerting police. Officers tracked the sisters down within 13 minutes and arrested them. Despite initially denying responsibility, both sisters later pleaded guilty to the offence. Detective Constable Tim Butler, who led the investigation, said, "This nasty and violent assault doled out by Katrina and Charlotte Whittam resulted in someone they consider to be their friend left alone and unconscious in the middle of Chester city centre with very serious injuries. With that in mind, following the conclusion of this investigation, I welcome the sentences handed to the Whittam sisters, and I hope that they spend their time behind bars to seriously consider their actions and what it means to be someone's friend. This case goes to show how a snap decision to turn to violence can have serious repercussions. Their actions, obviously fueled by the amount of alcohol they had consumed during the day of the incident, now means that they will be spending Christmas away from their respective families."
Hello, this is Diane Friss. Police conducted an immigration operation at a delivery depot in a village near Chester. On Tuesday, December the 23rd, officers from the Western Exploitation Team and immigration officers conducted an immigration and welfare operation at a parcel delivery depot in Waverton. Prior to the operation, officers had found that the deliveries from the premises were being subcontracted to illegal workers. The workers in question did not have the right to work in the UK and subsequently did not have the correct insurance to drive delivery vehicles, Cheshire Police said. The operation yielded a number of positive results in relation to both illegal workers and delivery vehicles being driven, including a man from Brazil being arrested on suspicion of immigration offences. An overstayer was located and reported to immigration. Two vehicles with no insurance were being used for parcel deliveries. A vehicle with no MOT was identified, and a defective brake light was identified on another vehicle. Detective Chief Inspector Chris Williams of the Western Exploitation Team said, "We know that the demand for delivery and postal companies increases considerably around Christmas, but those involved in the employment of illegal workers often have links to wider organised immigration crime, modern slavery and human trafficking. That is why we are committed to conducting regular operations like this and doing everything possible to identify those involved. I hope that the results from this operation will provide some reassurance to our communities and also act as a warning to those who are considering taking part in this type of organised crime." He added, "Information submitted to us from members of the public is vital to our investigations and operations such as this, so I would encourage anyone with any information or concerns about illegal activity in their area to get in touch."
Hello, Esther Newt here. A stroke survivor from Cheshire West, who launched a foul-mouthed tirade at a delivery driver before scratching him, has been fined. Graham Rawcliffe of Thompson Green in Cuddington pleaded guilty to assault by beating and using words to cause distress or alarm at Chester Magistrates Court on Tuesday. The charge relates to an incident on November 22, 2025, when the victim was parked in a disabled bay at a McDonald's restaurant in Winsford. The court heard on that date the man had parked in a disabled space when Rawcliffe approached him to tell him to get out of the disabled bay using foul language. Hannah Kelly, defending, said her client accepted his actions had been over the top, but explained that he is a blue badge holder and could not find a disabled parking spot because it was taken up by his victim. She said that prior to having a stroke at the age of 34, the defendant was a successful haulage business owner, but lost that and his home after his medical issues became too much. Ms. Kelly added that her client had been forced to relearn how to walk, talk, and feed himself, and still needed his wife's support. Magistrates said, "We cannot see what probation could do for you, so we will fine you." This was a grossly disproportionate reaction. Sitting for three more minutes wouldn't have changed your life too much, but it has changed your victim's. He was fined £200 and ordered to pay a surcharge of £80 and costs of £85 plus £50 in compensation to his victim.
Jan Woodhouse here. Police and Trading Standards officials seized 50,000 illegal cigarettes during a huge crackdown that has seen several arrests and shops shut down. More than 50 shops across Cheshire were visited and searched, with four prosecuted for the sale of illicit cigarettes. The crackdown, carried out between December the 8th and December the 12th, saw Cheshire Police team up with the Trading Standards, HMRC and Immigration Enforcement. Cheshire Police say it has resulted in two immediate closures, with closure orders being sought for three more stores. A total of four people were arrested in relation to immigration and fraud offences. Temporary Assistant Chief Constable Carlos Bruins said, "Our officers work hard to root out organised criminals operating in our shops, high streets and communities. Whilst the sale of illicit tobacco and illegal cigarettes and vapes may seem like a trivial crime to some, officers frequently find that where these offences are being committed, immigration offences and the exploitation of some of the most vulnerable people in our communities are occurring. Those involved in such activities often have links to drug trafficking and distribution, organised immigration crime, modern slavery and human trafficking, which is why we are committed to running regular operations such as this and doing all we can to identify those involved. I hope that the results from this operation will provide some reassurance to our communities and also act as a warning to those who are considering taking part in this type of activity."
Hello from Fiona Farger. People visiting the Countess of Chester Hospital are being urged to take precautions due to the rise of a highly contagious winter bug. Norovirus cases are on the rise in the community, and the Countess of Chester Hospital NHS Foundation Trust is urging residents to play their part in keeping loved ones, vulnerable patients and staff safe this winter. To help prevent the spread of norovirus, a highly contagious stomach bug causing diarrhoea and vomiting, the Trust is asking anyone with any symptoms of norovirus not to visit friends or relatives in hospital. Sue Pemberton, Director of Nursing and Quality at the Countess of Chester Trust, said, "We know how important it is to stay connected with loved ones, but protecting those in our care, as well as our staff and the wider community, must come first. We must ask anyone who is unwell or experiencing symptoms of norovirus to stay at home and rest rather than risk passing the infection on to others. A spokesperson for the Trust added, washing your hands regularly and thoroughly with soap and water remains the most effective way to prevent transmission of norovirus. Please help us to protect our community, especially those who are most vulnerable, by practicing good hand hygiene and staying home if you feel unwell. Sue added, please also help by using NHS services sensibly during this busy period. In a real emergency, call 999, but for all other health concerns, use NHS 111 or contact your GP.
Flintshire County Council has paid almost £500,000 to maintain Shire Hall in Mould since vacating its former headquarters. According to a Freedom of Information FOI request, the council has spent £403,271.61 on the building since moving the last staff into their new home at T. Dewi Sant in Ulo on February the 28th. The authority also confirmed that there was currently no prospective buyer for the site, which could potentially be used for housing. The council has confirmed a provisional demolition date of 2027, but could not comment on whether there is a timetable for the sale or redevelopment of the land. To date, the costs incurred by Shire Hall include electricity, £176,185, waste and cleaning, £4,202.72, security, £57,288 annual cost, gas, £17,121, and water, £1,349,029. These costs are significantly lower than what the council would have paid had it remained at Shire Hall. The annual running costs at the time the authority vacated the building were around £1.2 million. But the sprawling, virtually empty concrete complex, which was opened by Princess Margaret in 1968, continues to represent a significant ongoing cost to the Flintshire taxpayer at a time when council budgets are tight. A Flintshire County Council spokesperson said, the council is currently working through a feasibility study which will provide options as to how services, gas, electric and water to the law courts can be separated from County Hall. The feasibility report, which is in final stages of drafting, will define the works programme required to complete the infrastructure reconfiguration infrastructure reconfiguration works starting in 2026-27 and then follow on demolition in 2027-28. At this stage, the site needs to be cleared of legacy buildings and site infrastructure, which will in turn provide a site ready for redevelopment. The council will then be able to determine how the site redevelopment is to be taken forward.
A Broughton man has been jailed for his role in a major cocaine supply conspiracy that led to drugs worth more than £1.5 million being taken off the streets. Carl Iyer, 46, of BB Way, Broughton, was sentenced to 4 years in prison after pleading guilty to conspiracy to supply cocaine. Iyer was one of 12 individuals sentenced to Chester Crown Court following an investigation by Cheshire Constabulary into an organised crime group operating across Chester, North Wales and Staffordshire. The group was targeted as part of Operation Haunt, which ran between October 2023 and March 2025 and uncovered a large-scale conspiracy to supply cocaine. Police said Iyer acted as a courier for the group, transporting cocaine primarily between Blaken, Whitchurch and Holt. Iyer
Officers stopped Ayer's vehicle on the A41 on the 12th of July 2024 while it was travelling towards Whitchurch. Cocaine and cash were seized from both the vehicle and from Ayer himself. The wider investigation led to multiple arrests, search warrants and vehicle stops, culminating in the seizure of 15 kilograms of cocaine from a vehicle on the M6 in November 2024. The total street value of drugs recovered during the operation was estimated at up to £1.58 million. In total, 12 defendants received a combined sentence of more than 70 years in prison after all pleaded guilty to their roles in the conspiracy. Detective Sergeant Roy Wellings said the case marked the conclusion of a lengthy investigation into organised drug supply, adding that significant quantities of Class A drugs had been removed from local communities.
Shotton is set to benefit from a major programme of transport improvements and green infrastructure investment aimed at making the town safer, greener and more accessible. Flintshire County Council will begin work on the projects in the new year, delivering upgrades across key transport routes and public spaces. The Highways and Transport Scheme will start in early January and is expected to last up to 26 weeks. It will include the replacement of bus shelters, removal of unnecessary barriers, and new right turning pockets at key junctions on Charmleys Lane, Chester Close, Nelson Street, and Jubilee Street to improve traffic flow. Street lighting and traffic signals will be upgraded, with new benches, bollards and bins installed throughout the town. Carriageway resurfacing will also take place on the B5129 between Shotton Lane and Brook Road. Traffic management on this busy route will cause some disruption, but the council said it will prioritise off-carriageway work at the start of the project to limit impact. Road users are advised to plan ahead and allow extra time for journeys through the area. Councillor Glyn Banks, Cabinet Member for Waste and Transportation, said, "Maintaining and improving our highway and transport network in Shotton is essential to keep people moving safely and efficiently. These works will address pinch points on key routes and make everyday journeys safer and easier for road users and pedestrians. Green infrastructure projects at Charmleys Lane and Ashgrove car parks and the Henry Wheel Memorial Garden will begin on the 12th of January. The council said these projects form part of its place-making programme to enhance local environments, improve community well-being and support sustainability. They will expand green spaces, improve biodiversity and create accessible, nature-rich areas across the town. The projects are being supported by the Welsh Government's Transforming Towns Grant and the UK Government's Shared Prosperity Fund.
A planning application was submitted to Flintshire Council to build a new Home Bargains discount retail store on the Airfields development site in Deeside. The store would cover 2,322 square metres and a total of 178 parking spaces are proposed. This consists of 154 standard parking spaces, 12 accessible parking spaces, 10 parent and child parking spaces, and 2 electrical vehicle EV spaces. There would also be 16 customer-covered cycle spaces, along with 8 motorcycle spaces. The application went before Flintshire Council's Planning Committee on Wednesday, December the 17th, with a planning official recommending councillors to approve it. Zealand Councillor Christine Jones had urged Planning Committee members to give consideration to issues such as traffic and the scale of the scheme. Zealand Community Council said it understands the potential benefits of this development but raised concerns regarding the lack of public transport provision, particularly bus services, to and from the site. The planning officer's report concluded, the application site is located within the strategic Northern Gateway development and on land allocated for commercial uses, including retail. The principle of development is considered acceptable. All material considerations, including highway safety, flood risk, land contamination and ecology, have been fully assessed and are considered acceptable. It is therefore recommended that members endorse the recommendation to grant planning permission subject to the inclusion of conditions as set out in this report. Planning committee members formally approved the application for the development to proceed.
Flint Coast Guard Rescue Team has shared an end-of-year update confirming that 2025 was another busy period with 73 taskings recorded across a wide range of incidents. The call-outs include searches for missing people, reports of persons in the water, medical evacuations, and investigations into objects spotted along the coastline. During the year, three new Coast Guard rescue officers joined the unit after completing their training and are now fully operational members. Regular training continued throughout 2025, including joint exercises with neighbouring Coast Guard teams and Flint RNLI. The team said this cooperation is vital to ensuring successful outcomes during real emergencies. The update also included thanks to partner services, including Wirral, Rhyl, Crosby and Clandidno Coast Guard Rescue Teams, Holyhead Maritime Rescue Coordination Centre, HMS Coast Guard Rescue Helicopter 936, North Wales Police, North Wales Fire and Rescue Service, and the Welsh Ambulance Service. In a message of appreciation, the team acknowledged the support of their families for understanding the demands of on-call work, often involving sudden departures at night or during family events. We really couldn't do without you all, the post said. The team ended its message by wishing the public a safe and happy new year and thanked all members of the wider search and rescue community for their cooperation throughout 2025.
Buckley woman who has dedicated more than 60 years to the British Red Cross has been recognised with the British Empire Medal in the King's New Year's Honours List. Barbara Thomas, 76, began volunteering with the charity at the age of 11 and is now an emergency response volunteer based in Wrexham. A respected trainer, Barbara has adapted first aid courses for neurodiverse attendees, taught life-saving techniques to the public and trained fellow volunteers in emotional support. She also played a key role in the Wrexham Welfare Support Project, a partnership with North Wales Police and local health services, aimed at helping ensure that the community have safe nights out. British Red Cross Chief Executive Beatrice Butsana-Sita said, "For over six decades, Barbara has been a huge part of our work in Wales, making her mark in numerous services. In 2012, during the St Asaph floods, she displayed incredible kindness and humanity while supporting people who were affected by the incident. She's a fantastic example of the brilliant staff and volunteers who support our vital work, and I'd like to congratulate her on the well-deserved recognition." And also, an 81-year-old social worker from Flintshire has been awarded the British Empire Medal in the New Year's Honours List. Sheena Harrison has devoted her life to supporting vulnerable children and families, earning widespread respect for her dedication and compassion. Described by colleagues as outstanding and truly inspiring, she continues to work tirelessly to ensure that children can remain in safe, stable foster homes rather than entering residential care or being moved within the care system. Now in her ninth decade, she continues to provide therapeutic support to foster carers and young people, often responding to crises at any hour. Over more than 20 years with a specialist trauma-informed fostering agency, she has become the cornerstone of their support, staying with distressed young people, visiting hospitals and police stations, and ensuring that children are never left alone when they need help most. Her work has transformed the lives of countless children who've experienced trauma, helping foster carers understand emotional needs and secure, stable, long-term placements. Alongside her professional work, Sheena is chair of the governors at Merlin School in Bagilt, where she also serves on the safeguarding team. And she has chaired the Friends of Bagilt Foreshore Group, helping protect and promote the area's coastal heritage.
Firefighters were called out to an incident in the early hours of New Year's Day in Chester. One fire crew attended the scene at about 12:40 a.m. today, Thursday, January the 1st, in Nevin Road. A spokesperson for Cheshire Fire and Rescue Service said a water backpack was used to extinguish a small fire in a bin. The fire is believed to have been caused by a discarded firework. In another incident, two fire crews were called to an incident involving a barge in a village on the outskirts of Chester. Firefighters attended the scene at about 6:10 p.m. on Sunday, December the 28th, on Whitchurch Road, Cristleton. A spokesperson for Cheshire Fire and Rescue Service said, fire crews were called to a small electrical fire in the engine compartment of a canal barge in Cristleton. A dry powder extinguisher was used to extinguish the fire. Firefighters cut away materials to check for any fire spread. A large fan was then used to clear smoke from the boat.
Pub goers can enjoy a January sale at two Wetherspoon pubs in Chester, including a pint of Worthington's beer at £1.49. Pub managers at the Square Bottle in Foregate Street and the Bull and Stirrup Hotel in Upper Northgate Street are reducing the price of a range of drinks and meals from Friday, January the 2nd until Thursday, January the 15th inclusive. The other drinks featured in the sale are a range of wines at £3.49 a glass and selected spirits, including a mixer, at £2.49 each. A full range of low and alcohol-free drinks is included. Customers can also enjoy savings on food too, with an 11-inch margarita pizza and a crunchy chicken burger served with chips or side salad, each costing £5.49 with a soft drink and £7.02 with an alcoholic drink. In addition, a choice of 6 jacket potatoes plus 3 new gourmet jackets will be available in the sale. The Square Bottle manager, Sean Pierce, said, departmental stores and shops hold their sales in January, so it is a perfect time to have a sale in the pub too. The range of drinks and food on sale in the pub is aimed at suiting a wide variety of tastes. We have included a large selection of low and non-alcoholic drinks. I believe that the January sale will prove popular with our customers. And as always, staff at the pub will serve customers responsibly. A mother and son duo of jaguars have arrived at a specially designed retirement habitat for big cats at Chester Zoo. Bonita, a 16-year-old female, and her 11-year-old son Remy have arrived at the zoo, where they will be cared for by its specialist carnivore team. Wild jaguars typically live for around 12 years, meaning the pair are expected to require increased support as they age. Bonita and Remy have lived side by side since Remy's birth and will remain together in their new home in Chester. Keepers say they are well prepared to provide tailored care for Bonita as she enters her later years, while supporting Remy to continue thriving alongside his mother. The move follows months of detailed planning and collaboration with experts from Europe's Jaguar Conservation Programme, with every aspect of the animal's transport and long-term welfare carefully considered. Bonita has been a devoted mother to Remy throughout his life, so ensuring that they stayed together was a real priority for everyone involved. Remy's journey has been a remarkable one. In 2019, a lump was removed from his head following a diagnosis of a very aggressive malignant cancer, which makes his continued good health today all the more extraordinary. Keepers said it's fantastic to see them already settling in and exploring their new surroundings side by side. Here at Chester, Bonita and Remy will receive the very highest standard of care. Sorry. We hope their journey will inspire people to care about jaguars and support efforts to protect the forests they depend on. Jaguar territories are increasingly fragmented as more land is taken up for agriculture, and this leads to more human-wildlife conflict between carnivores and farmers in rural areas. For instance, the Interandean dry forest in southern Bolivia have shrunk to 6% of their original size, breaking the link between habitat loss and the products we rely on will benefit jaguars in the wild all over the world.
Chester Charity Adoption Matters will be among the voluntary adoption agencies, VAAs, across the UK, taking part in Big Adoption Day on Wednesday, January the 21st, 2026. The event will highlight the work that organisations do to find loving adoptive families for children waiting to be placed, and the benefits of adopting through a VAA. Big Adoption Day, led by the Consortium of Voluntary Adoption Agencies, CVAA, and the UK's first children's charity, Corum, sees participating agencies hosting information events in their and celebrating the real-life stories of families who have adopted to encourage anyone interested in exploring adoption to find out more. 2,940 children are currently waiting to be adopted across England, of which almost half have been waiting for more than 18 months since entering care. The charity says there is an urgent need for more prospective adoptive parents to come forward to provide permanent loving homes for these children. VAAs, like Adoption Matters, are independent, non-for-profit organisations offering a personalised service, a wealth of experience and lifelong support to adoptive families. Chief Executive Susie White said, Big Adoption Day is a fantastic opportunity to join together with our colleagues across the country to shine a light on the services we offer, as well as raising awareness about the urgent need for more people to consider adopting. Every child deserves the stability and love of a permanent home. We know that adoption can transform lives, not just for children, but for the families too. At Adoption Matters, we provide lifelong support to our families because we know adoption is a journey, and we are committed to walking that path with them every step of the way. Our events are designed for people to find out more with no commitment to proceed any further. There is no pressure. So do come along and find out more or download one of our adoption information packs. You could make an incredible difference in a child's life. For further information about Adoption Matters and details of the Big Adoption Day event, visit www.adoptionmatters.org/big 2026. I'll repeat that. www.adoptionmatters.org/big2026.
Talk about a year of ups and downs. Chester Football Club were just 90 minutes away from promotion during the spring, but they end 2025 having experienced a few tough moments. A haul of 87 points meant that Callum McIntyre's Chargers ended last season in fourth place, seeing them qualify for the National League North playoffs. In the first round, host Chester beat Buxton 2-1. Then McIntyre's side went to Kidderminster Harriers and they returned with a 2-1 triumph. The Chester boss described his players as outstanding on the back of a superb display. This set up a promotion final at Scunthorpe United, which the Iron won 2-1 after extra time. McIntyre was understandably disappointed after his side's promotion dreams were ended in heartbreaking fashion. But he said, "Congratulate the winners. It was a two good football clubs together today, proper football clubs, and we congratulate Scunthorpe on beating us over 120 minutes. I wish them all the best." This season, things have been trickier for the Blues, who struggled to get going during the early stages of the current campaign. While Chester did make their way through to the first round proper of the FA Cup, where they lost 3-0 at League Two Cambridge United, a 2-1 league defeat at home to Brentford Town saw discussions taking place behind the scenes. In a statement to supporters in late October, the board of directors said, "We are all disappointed with the poor start to the season and understand and share the concern and frustration you have expressed. Callum, his staff and the players are united in their belief that they can deliver the results and performances needed to rectify the current situation and in wanting the opportunity to do so." As the year drew to a close, Chester embarked on a 7-game unbeaten run, but this was halted by back-to-back 3-1 losses to South Shields and Telford. However, in their final match of 2025, Chester got the better of Macclesfield 2-0.
Living Roof bus shelters are on their way to Cheshire West and Chester, with up to 10 new bus shelters being planned as part of a bus stop maintenance programme. Biodiversity boosting living roofs are designed to be low maintenance and long lasting, while contributing towards climate resistance and increasing greenery on the high streets. Unlike traditional sedum only roofs, these roofs are planted with a mix of native wildflowers and sedum, making them more attractive to bees and pollinators. Working in partnership with Bauer Media Outdoor UK, Cheshire West and Chester Council have identified 10 locations that would benefit from the modern sustainable bus shelters that also include covered seating. There will also be several sites where solar panels are to be installed to power the internal lighting. The first of the new bus shelters has been installed on Station Road in Little Sutton. It is solar powered, featuring a living roof, and both features highlight the council's dedication to sustainability. Rose MacArthur, Director of Transport and Highways, said, "We've embraced the concept of living roofs in buildings with examples in Chester of the Little Rudy car park, the bus interchange, and most recently the New Market car park." Emma Lloyd, Portfolio Partnership Manager at Bauer Media Outdoor, said, "Living roofs are simple yet powerful ways to bring nature back into urban spaces. By transforming everyday infrastructure into green assets, we are supporting councils like Cheshire West and Chester in delivering meaningful environmental benefits, while enhancing the look and feel of local communities. Locations planned for living roof shelters in 2026 include one in Hough Green, Chester, and also two stops on Hoole Way and Charles Street in Chester. Well, we hope you find our selection of news items for this week of interest. I'd like to thank our readers, Helen, Margaret, Diane, Esther and Jan, and also Owen, who will be creating and uploading the edition later today. And I'd now like to ask our readers to join me in saying goodbye to end the live section of this reading. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Fat squirrels celebrated. Move over, fat bears. It's time for the super-sized squirrels to take centre stage as they prepare for winter. In the first ever edition of Fat Squirrels Week, an animal named Chunkosaurus rex took the title for the biggest furry-tailed rodent in Texas. He won a social media vote against the likes of Chunk Norris, named after American actor Chuck Norris, and Stanley the Texas Tank. The Chunky Chomp is from Dinosaur Valley State Park, which posted, "We appreciate all the support for Chunkosaurus Rex during this hard-fought battle." It added that he hopes to see his competitors again next year when he tries to retain the title. Texas State Parks were inspired to start the contest by Camatari National Park annual Fat Bear Week, which generates huge interest all over the world. What animal could be next in line to pock on the pounds for winter and win a similar contest? Who knows?
A day in the life of model Abby Clancy. Abby Clancy, 39, was born in Liverpool and launched her modelling career after coming second on Britain's Next Top Model on the TV in 2006. She has worked with brands including Agent Provocateur, Victoria's Secret and Lipsy. Clancy presents the podcast The Therapy Crouch with her ex-footballer husband Peter Crouch. The couple live in Surrey with their four children, Sophia, 14, Liberty, 10, Johnny, 7 and Jack, 6. She says, "Having four kids means I'm an early bird, so I'm normally up by 6:30. Everyone has to be out of the house by 7:50, so the Crouch household is pretty hectic in the mornings. The older two dress themselves while the younger two mess about, and there's usually a fight with the older ones. I'll have a coffee and everyone else will have croissant, which the dogs try to pinch, and Peter's usually playing ping pong or something over the breakfast table, kicking a ball around the kitchen with Jack or playing tennis with Sophia. It's getting better, but it's still carnage. But I'm one of four myself, so I'm used to that. Pete likes to portray himself as the good cop with the kids, so I have to be the bad cop. I'm the one who's barking, 'Sit down, eat that up, brush your teeth, be quiet.' Once all four of our kids are out at school, my day can begin. I might overindulge on holiday and consume a bit of wine, but then I'm straight back on a health kick, so I go to the gym every day. I do a bit of everything. I do burpees, squats, exercise bike, and then maybe some strength training or Pilates. I try to steer clear of too much high energy activity because I've read that it elevates your cortisol levels, and with four kids, my levels are high enough already. After the gym, I head off to my happy place, which is doing dressage with my horse, Enzo, who's like a big teddy bear. The people at the stables think I'm crazy, because after the session, I'll often just stay there for an hour and cuddle Enzo, because he's gorgeous. Once a week, we record our podcast called The Therapy Crouch, which I totally love. It's been going since January 2023, and we've had listener questions on all sorts of things, anything from infidelity in marriage and the best chat-up lines to dealing with difficult teenagers and dating red flags. It's been therapy for me and Pete too. If we're doing the podcast, lunch will be some chicken sandwiches from the deli. And once a week, I'll meet up with a group of friends for a girly lunch of pasta and a cocktail or two. By the time the bill comes, it's often 3 p.m. and school pick-up time, which means collecting the kids from four different schools, then ferrying them to their various clubs. Like Pete, our eldest, Sophia, is naturally talented at sport. She is an amazing tennis player already, and thankfully she seems to have already passed that difficult teenage stage. They're all good kids, really. Dinner is always cooked by me. I made some incredible Dauphinoise potatoes with steak, mushrooms and green beans last night. If I'm too tired or I'm out, Pete'll either get a takeaway or make the only dish he ever cooks, which is Daddy's omelette, basically stuffed with whatever's left in the fridge. We overdid the wine drinking a bit during COVID, so now we're trying to drink less, and it all seems a world away from when Pete was playing for England and the wives and girlfriends culture was in full flow. We've all grown up a bit since then. Although whenever anyone mentions the England team, I still think that they mean the team with David Beckham, Ashley Cole and Peter. Once the kids have gone to bed, then come down again and gone to bed and come down again and finally settled and gone to bed, we'll get in bed as early as possible ourselves. Then we'll watch some TV. At the moment, I'm obsessed with the relationships on the programme Married at First Sight Australia. I am trying to train Pete to be a bit more emotionally intelligent, as sometimes he's like a baby. He'll walk out and slam a door and ignore me for an hour, but he is getting better and we're very solid as a unit. We like the same things and we laugh at the same things. Ours is a happy house, even after 20 years together. This was adapted from an article in the Sunday Times magazine of Sunday, December the 14th, 2025.
Hi, I'm Lara, and I'm reading an article from BBC News entitled Island Nature Reserve's Seagrass to be Mapped. The waters around an island nature reserve are to be surveyed for the first time to map seagrass habitats. Initial surveys at Brownsea Island and Poole Harbour, Dorset, revealed an abundance of seagrass, which is a haven for wildlife, including some species of seahorse. Oceanography experts from the University of Southampton are expected to carry out a detailed underwater survey in the first half of 2026. National Trust Ranger Sophie Giles, who instigated the project, said it was important for seagrass beds to be mapped so they could be better protected. The initial surveys were conducted by Dr. Ken Collins of the National Oceanography Centre, Southampton, in August. Ms. Giles, who lives on the island, said, "At the moment, seagrass beds are vulnerable to dredging, trawling and recreational activities, so it's really important we get them mapped. We've got two seahorses in Poole Harbour and Studland Bay, spiny seahorses and short-snouted seahorses. But seagrass is also home to lots of other life. It's a protective, sheltered habitat." Dr. Collins has previously surveyed the seagrass beds in Studland Bay, but said it was the first time the smaller brown sea habitats had been studied. He said, as well as mapping the beds, researchers would look at sediments and the physical environments that favour the seagrass. Ms. Giles said, following the detailed survey, the seagrass would continue to be monitored. She said the long-term goal is for local recreational divers to be trained to help keep an eye on the habitats, fostering a sense of stewardship and responsibility within the community to help protect and preserve it. What is seagrass? Seagrass is an underwater flowering plant, once widespread across the UK, but seagrass beds have declined more than 40% since the 1930s due to coastal development, pollution, disease and physical disturbance. The beds or meadows form in shallow coastal areas with plenty of light and favour sheltered bays and lagoons protected from the waves. Seagrass beds are an important part of the marine ecosystem, serving as a nursery and home for a wide variety of marine species.
Hello, my name is Michael Fern, and I'll be reading an article about the blooming octopus. A wildlife charity has declared 2025 the year of the blooming octopus, after record numbers were spotted off the southwest coast of England. In its annual marine review, the Wildlife Trust says octopus numbers were this summer at their highest level since 1950. Warmer winters, which are linked to climate change, are thought to be responsible for the population spike, which is known as a bloom. The charity's findings are backed up by official figures which show that more than 1,200 tonnes of octopus was caught by fishermen in UK waters in the summer of 2025. The Wildlife Trust says the highest number of octopuses have been seen off the south coast of Devon and Cornwall since 1950. It's a dramatic increase on previous years. It's unclear at this point whether the rise in numbers is permanent or cyclical, which would mean octopus numbers returning to more typical levels after this year's bloom. Experts say most of those spotted are Octopus vulgaris, a species commonly seen in the warmer Mediterranean Sea.
Biting back against junk food ads. A campaign group led by young people was buying outdoor advertising spaces to stop junk food companies getting there first. Bite Back wants to change the way that unhealthy foods are advertised to children. As part of new research, it went on the lookout for outdoor adverts in London, Birmingham, Liverpool, and Newcastle. It found 859 adverts on billboards, bus stops, shopping centres, and phone boxes. Of the 377 that advertised food and drink, over half were trying to sell a product that was high in fat or sugar.
A day in the life of actor and writer Mark Gatiss. Mark Gatiss, 59, was born in Sedgefield in County Durham, and he studied theatre arts at Bretton Hall College near Wakefield, where he met his future writing partners, Rhys Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton. In 1994, with another friend, Jeremy Dyson, they created the stage show The League of Gentlemen, which became a BAFTA-winning TV series. His acting and writing credits include Doctor Who, Sherlock, and A Ghost Story for Christmas. He lives with his husband, Ian Hallard, and their Labrador, Bob, in North London. He says, "Increasingly, I wake in the middle of the night because I'm nearly 60 and that's what happens. At 7:30 a.m, I make tea for me and Ian. I let Bob the dog out, then outrageously he'll come back and lie on our bed. We gave in to that long time ago. Breakfast is usually cereal, listening to Radio 3. I have stopped listening to the news, apart from radio bulletins. I feel ashamed of myself for withdrawing, but waking up to Mozart is much better for everyone's mental health. The closest I get to a routine is if I'm writing, which I have been doing a lot this year. I'll be at my desk from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. with a break for lunch. I don't have to be in a dark, gothic place to write dark stuff. Quite the reverse. I'm generally an optimistic person, and you need to take the subject matter lightly because you're going to an odd place. I grew up watching Hammer horror films and Will Hay films like The Ghost of St. Michael's. I was always looking for something a bit spooky. Murder at the moment is going through a real renaissance. There's a romance about crime, a strange mystique, and a puzzle element too. It's not the bleakness that I dwell on, though. The first time I watched Doctor Who, I instantly adored it because it's so intrinsically odd. It has its roots in H.G. Wells and Sherlock Holmes, but it's off-kilter. Ian is an actor and we've worked together on a couple of things. I directed his play, The Way Old Friends Do, 2 years ago. We enjoyed it, although when you're going home with the writer and star of the play, the questions from him keep coming. Sometimes I need to shut the door for a bit. I can't cook. Ian scarcely more than me, so we do eat out a lot. But at lunchtime, and this is a terrible admission of middle to old age, we just don't care what we have. Almost anything you might suggest, we go, oh, that'll do. I like variety and things out of the blue. I'd love to play an agent in Bond, not Bond himself, but no one ever rings me up to offer me that. I try to keep things varied at home too. I carve out time for oil painting, mostly portraits, and I collect fossils, which I've done since I was a kid. I read a lot, but murder mysteries feel like work to me now. Ian and I might cobble something together for dinner or order in, but we do like going out so that someone else does the washing up. I love Italian and Turkish food, and even the fancy restaurants where they give you liquid nitrogen. It's just that I leave those ones hungry. The measure of a proper friendship is that you pick up where you left off, like I always do with Steve and Reese. It's hard to believe that it's 20 years since we did the League of Gentlemen's Apocalypse movie. We do see each other, but not as much as any of us would like. Life gets in the way. Ian and I often go to the theatre, but at heart we're homebodies and we watch a lot of TV, good and terrible. We loved the programme I Kissed a Boy, which was a gay dating show with Danny Minogue. That was my favourite. Friday night has always been horror movie night. I have to start early watching the telly because I nod off. There's no better sleep than the one that you can have on the sofa. I love baths and I have a proper cast iron one. They're a useful place to think up plots. It's time to go to bed at 10:30 p.m, so I'll put the radio on and drift off. Ian and I have a shared joke. He dreams that ABBA ask him to join the band and it's all great. I'll dream of my feet suddenly turning blue and a child made of paper, always something terrifying and strange. I woke up yelling the other night and immediately wrote it down because it was a good story idea. A Ghost Story for Christmas, The Room in the Tower by Mark Gatiss, will be on BBC Two and iPlayer this Christmas. This was adapted from an article in the Sunday Times magazine of December the 7th, 2025.
I'm Limone and I'm going to be reading an article about the Northern Lights. In 2026, there is a good chance that the vivid purples, reds and greens of the Northern Lights will be visible in skies across the UK. Over the past couple of years, the sun has been in a heightened state of activity as part of its natural cycle. While the peak of this cycle was observed late 2024, we can still expect more major solar events in the year ahead. In mid-November 2025, a large solar flare erupted from the surface of the sun, resulting in a spectacular display of the Northern Lights in the UK. That was not the only time we were treated to dazzling displays of brightly lit skies, sometimes as far south as Devon and Cornwall. The sun has an 11-year cycle, ranging from periods with few sunspots and low activity to times with many sunspots that produce increased activity and energy. During the peak of the current cycle, which NASA confirmed occurred in October 2024, a higher number of sunspots led to more frequent eruptions of solar flares and coronal mass ejections. These events send powerful bursts of energy and charged material into space, causing, among other effects, the auroras we observe from Earth. On the 11th of November, a large solar flare measuring X5.1, on a scale that runs from X1 to X10 and beyond, was observed on the Sun. It released a huge amount of energy towards Earth, resulting in one of the best aurora displays of the year, with sightings even reported in southern England. While this was the strongest flare of 2025, it did not come close to the spectacular events of May and October 2024, when X8.8 and X9 solar flares were recorded respectively. Although we are now past the peak of the current solar cycle and heading towards solar minimum, expected around 2031 to 32, solar activity will remain relatively high through 2026. Even in a quieter year, it only takes one large solar flare or a coronal mass ejection directed towards Earth to produce a stunning Northern Lights display across the UK. The spring and autumn equinoxes can also bring a slight increase in activity due to the alignment of the Sun and Earth, what's known as the Russell-McFerrin effect. This means you are roughly twice as likely to see the aurora at these times of year. While seeing the Northern Lights may once have involved a trip to the Arctic Circle, there have been many more apparent sightings in the UK in recent years. This is partly due to better technology, forecasting and communication. Today, numerous satellites monitor the sun, measuring the solar wind and the energy it emits, giving us a better understanding of solar activity and earlier warnings when it increases. This, in turn, helps forecasters predict when there may be impacts on Earth, including the chances of seeing the aurora. And most of us now have a camera on our phones capable of capturing a decent image of even a weakened Northern Lights display, which we can easily share on social media.
It really has been exceptional, says Matt Slater from the Cornwall Wildlife Trust. We've seen octopuses jet-propelling themselves along. We've seen octopuses camouflaging themselves so they look just like seaweed. We've seen them cleaning themselves, and we've even seen them walking using two legs just as to nonchalantly cruise away from the diver underwater. The eight-armed cephalopods eat shellfish such as lobster, crabs and scallops, so the Wildlife Trust warned that if population numbers remain high, both fishing and eating habits may have to change. Alongside good news for octopus lovers, the Wildlife Trust Marine Review contains more sobering news. The Trust says this year was bookended by environmental disasters, with a collision between an oil tanker and a container ship in the North Sea in March spilling huge quantities of plastic resin pellets and nearly 4.5 tons of biobeads released from a water treatment plant in Sussex in November. There was some better news for wildlife elsewhere, with a record 46,000 puffins recorded on Skomer, Pembrokeshire, while the charismatic black and white bird has made a comeback on the Isle of Muck, following conservation efforts by Ulster Wildlife Trust to remove invasive brown rats.
New subjects and changes in the national curriculum to come in 2028. The government is shaking up the national curriculum and introducing media literacy lessons in schools from September 2028. This will see primary pupils learning media and information literacy in school for the first time. It's all about our ability to think carefully about what we see or hear online, on TV or in newspapers, and how to decide whether it's trustworthy. Pupils will gain vital skills like how to spot fake news, identify misinformation and disinformation, and become critical thinkers. This summer, after speaking to experts from the likes of First News, the Media and Information Literacy Alliance and the Guardian Foundation, the House of Lords Communication Committee and others, a report was produced to enable a syllabus to be developed to teach children to protect them from the dangers of false information. This announcement shows that the government has agreed with those recommendations. Also, a new test will be introduced for eight-year-olds. In further changes, a new reading test will be introduced in year eight. This will help schools to identify pupils who will need a bit extra support, with around a quarter of children leaving primary school without being able to read properly. The teaching of computing at GCSE will also change and be made broader, plus there will be an AI qualification for 16 to 18 year olds, which is very interesting. Additional reforms will ensure that every child gets access to sport, arts and extracurricular activities. Pupils will also be encouraged to study arts, humanities and languages, alongside core subjects like English, maths and science.
Presenter Mary Portas talks about her life. Presenter and retail expert Mary Portas, 65, grew up in Watford. She was creative director of Harvey Nichols in the 90s, and she went on to present TV shows such as BBC's Mary Queen of Shops. In 2011, she was appointed David Cameron's High Street Czar. She has three children, two from her first marriage to engineer Graham Portas and one from her second marriage to fashion writer Melanie Rickey. She lives in London. She says, "At 60, I got divorced. I had to leave my family home. I fell head over heels. I lost a huge amount of money in my business. I remember thinking, is there anything else coming? It was deeply frightening. I had to dig deep into my beliefs and know that if I sat with the pain, this too shall pass. It did, but it took a good few years. At the top of the fashion business, it was mainly men, and there was an alpha culture. It wasn't just Harvey Nichols, it was the world in the 80s and 90s. I remember being told firmly by a boss, just do it. You either saw women lean in the words of Sheryl Sandberg, and become one of them, or coquettishly giggle. You can't change the culture overnight, that's for sure. I was on a photo shoot with a very famous photographer, and as I bent over to style a model, he slapped my bottom. First of all, you don't do anything. The power in the room is with the photographer. I went to get a coffee, and the stylist, who was older and worked for Vogue, said, next time he bends over to take a photograph, just do the same to him. And I did. My father was a Protestant from Belfast and my mother was an Irish Catholic, so they left Ireland for Watford in the 50s. My mum was a redhead, fiery, funny and always with one-liners. She was a great cook, she played the violin and she read poetry. I always felt safe and warm and loved, but I also felt like I never had a place in the family. I'm the fourth of five kids. I remember once saying to my mum, why has Michael got an extra potato on his plate? And she said, well, he's the oldest and he's a boy. Well, I was never going to be the eldest and I certainly wasn't going to be a boy. So I made up for it by being naughty and loud and irreverent. My mum once said to me, if I'd had you first, I'd have stopped then. She died suddenly when I was 16. It was like someone had turned the light out. I felt so lonely. I didn't know anyone who'd lost a parent. I didn't have the words for it. I used to leave the house to get the bus to school and I'd cry on the way and then cry on the way home. It got worse because my dad remarried. Then he died of a massive heart attack and he left our family home to his wife of 9 months. Portus and her younger brother, then 16, stayed with family friends in a council house. It was slightly Dickensian. Suddenly, everything is your financial responsibility. Once you go into that space of survival, you work harder and you learn more. I'm good at what I do, but at the root of it is a fear that there's nothing left to fall back on. I trained at Harrods and I loved it. Al Fayed wasn't there then, he came afterwards. Then I was a display manager at Topshop, and by the time I turned up at Harvey Nichols, I was 28, in my fluorescent Topshop suit with my hair coloured. Everyone else looked like a Sloan Ranger. They all looked like Princess Diana. Luxury then was for people who had money. I spent years wanting to recreate a place that was home. I look at my children now, my daughter recently turned 30, and I know that there'll always be somewhere for them to come home to for a Sunday lunch. I've never been in therapy. I've been doing meditation daily for 20 years. It's being conscious of my actions and knowing this is okay, this is a great life. Happiness now is family. I am completely a family person. I bumped into Joanna Lumley doing her audiobook when I was doing mine. I hadn't seen her in 30 years. We suddenly went back to the Harvey Nichols days and it was such fun remembering. Absolutely Fabulous was filmed in the Harvey Nichols shop when I was the creative director. She is a class act, part of a generation of incredible women like Twiggy, now in their late 70s. It gives you hope, doesn't it? Mary Portis's book, written by Mary Portis and narrated by Mary Portis, is now available as an audiobook with a running time of 8 hours and 4 minutes. This was adapted from an article in the Times magazine of Saturday, the 6th of December, 2025.
Why water matters. One in four people around the world don't have clean water at home, said the United Nations. Experts and campaigners highlighted the world's biggest water problems and suggested what we can do to help solve them. The UN said that around 2.1 billion people don't have safe drinking water and half the world's population doesn't have proper toilets or hand washing facilities. Water shortages are caused by climate change, pollution and population growth, and poorer countries are often hit hardest. In the UK, a study this year showed that leaks from old pipes lose enough water every day to fill 1,200 Olympic-sized swimming pools. That's about 3 billion litres. Meanwhile, droughts in southern Europe have made it harder to grow food. But the news isn't all bad. Organisations like WaterAid are helping communities build clean water pumps, and new inventions are creating ways to reuse wastewater safely, purify water using solar power, and even collect it from fog.